The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now we're going to wrap up the radio hour today by getting outside a little bit and showing a visitor around town.
It looks like a willow, that one?
That's a willow. Yeah,
the visitor is Carl Ove Knausgård. And if you know his name, it's for his huge autobiographical novel, six volumes worth, called My Struggle. It was an unlikely literary hit that describes the events of his life in infinite detail. Knausgård's new project is only a bit less ambitious. It's a four-part series named after the seasons, one book per season. And each book consists of dozens of short essays, reflections on the most common things addressed to his then-unborn daughter. The first book in the series is Autumn, and it was just published. When Carl Ove Knausgård was in town recently, he took a long walk with the New Yorker's Josh Rothman.
So we're in this particularly lovely spot, part of Central Park. I wonder, could you just describe where we are as best you can?
Yeah.
What you see?
No,
in front
it's
of
yeah, it's water here, and it's kind of green. What would you say the color is? It's dark, dark green, muddy green, so you can't see through it. And there's a lot of leaves floating on it, which are yellow. And then you have rocks coming down. So it really is gray and green and yellow just around us. And you have some rocks with people on, and the people look extremely not in the nature. They are, you know, the colors of the clothes are very different. They are not part of this. They're coming here to see it and be seen. And then you have the skyscrapers behind, which makes it kind of incredibly beautiful. It frames it. And I would, if I'd been a painter, I would love to paint those people there. Yeah. It would have been fantastic if I could, you know. So you are also a bit confused, because if you just sit down, it is like it is, you are in a forest or in the woods somewhere. And if you look up, it is, you are in a city. And those two perspectives is hard to get together.
It's funny how Central Park has gotten more beautiful with time since when it was first laid out. There weren't these buildings.
Yeah.
So it was more of just a park. You were just in a park.
Yeah.
It didn't have the same uniqueness that it has now, I guess. You know.
But it also made me feel sad a bit, because it is in a city, you know. It is something, I don't know why that is, but if I should write about it, I would have written about that, I think.
The feeling that it's a little sad.
Yeah, a little sad it is.
No, I know what you mean, and it always has a slightly, like, artificial vibe.
Yeah,
a little bit
but
of
yeah, but it's also strange. Why shouldn't we embrace the artificial? I mean, that's wonderful, isn't it? We have created it, and it is made, and it is great. But I do feel that often. It's the same with the internet. I do have this same sadness when I think of it.
It makes you sad, the internet makes you sad.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does. It keeps my children indoor, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, me too.
And just over there, I think it is, must be a cherry tree, isn't it not? Yeah. Which I wrote about in one of the books, when they blossom.
Yeah,
I don't know how shy they are when they blossom. You don't see them now, it's just part of the green. And then they can become incredibly beautiful and blossoming and with a kind of a shyness to them. which is to me, you know, it's like being, yeah, my daughter is that age, she's 13, mm-hmm. and she's kind of blossoming somehow, mm-hmm. and she's being aware of how beautiful she is, and that's the quality of a cherry tree somehow, if you know what I mean.
The origin of this book seems like it's partly being a father.
Yeah.
It's like about children, and you capture so much of what it's like to think and feel when you're young. But I wonder if you could just say something about how do you think the way that children live is different from the way that adults live?
You know, I have 4 children. Mm-hmm. And maybe when I spend a summer day with them, it's, to me, it is like nothing. It is like just, time is just passing. There's nothing remarkable happening. It's like the world is not attached to me, or I'm not attached to the world anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I remember the summer days when I was a child myself, how important everything were and how attached I was to what happened, and how slowly those days evolved somehow. And I find it very easy to underestimate my children, that I don't see them. They're just, you know, little creatures, and, you know, not realizing that they have a enormous, huge and independent inner life, which somehow I think the task as a parent is to be aware of that.
Is it ever hard to re-engage with your family life after you've been secluded in your writing?
No, because it is part of the same. I mean, they run in and out, and I never isolate, you know, physically when they are there.
Yeah.
When at school, I do. When I was young, I believed in that. So then I went out to islands and lighthouses and wrote and was completely alone and thought that was what it took to be a writer. In solitude, but now it's the opposite. I mean, I've never written so much as I had when I have children. So it's like just flowing with children and words.
Why is that? Like, what is it about being surrounded by the kids that makes it somehow easier?
Well, you have to lower your, you know, self-criticism. You can't afford it. You have just to write when you can write, and that's such a good thing. It's like. The notion of a masterpiece is no longer relevant. It's just have to write today.
Just what you can do.
Yeah.
In that time.
And that's a liberating thing, really.
Yeah. So you were saying earlier that you had been in Albania to witness a brain surgery. Could you explain what were you doing there?
I read this book by a British neurosurgeon called Henry Marsh, and the book is called Do No Harm, and I was really, really taken by it. And then a newspaper asked me, you know, do you want to write for us, and what do you want to write? And I said, I want to meet him. Then I was in touch with him, and he said, well, I'm going to Albania and Nepal, and you can meet me there. And I did. So I traveled down to Albania, and I witnessed 2 brain surgeries. There.
What did you think when you saw the brain exposed in the surgical theater?
It was, first of all, it was extremely beautiful, which I didn't expect. I saw it through, you know, magnifying lens. So it was like landscapes, like you were seeing a landscape, but the rivers were red, and there was a kind of a white, it looked like a glacier, you know, and then the red river come flushing over it, and it was incredibly beautiful, and the white glacier was, of course, you know, the cancer.
Right.
Yeah. So it was very weird and strange and very beautiful.
So it really was like he describes in the book.
Yeah.
Henry Marsh, yeah. Because he talks about that it's this, he says it's like the arches of a cathedral, the veins. It's actually incredible.
Yeah, it is.
Wow.
But when you see it from a, you know, without that, it's just a gray lump. It is nothing. And then you open it up and it is absolutely magical. Look at that.
Oh.
It's a turtle.
It's a turtle.
Yeah. Just a head above the water. And the head is like a snake, so I hate snakes, so it's a bit... Oh, now it's diving down. You heard me. It disappeared completely.
It's pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm going to remember. That turtle.
There he is.
Oh. Oh, it is a strange creature.
What is it that's so strange about the turtle?
It's the age. They're so incredibly old species. But that he or she is very young. That kind of amazed me. Also with frogs. You sense a certain primitive thing, but not to him or her. It's not primitive at all. It is them and their life. And I just feel it's so strange to be contemporary to sharks and turtles and snakes and frogs. And
it's funny, moments like that where, because I think this is a theme in the book too, where it's like the things that are almost eternal kind of next to the things that are very transient.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that the world is a kind of unchanging place? Like when you look at a turtle like that, it makes you think, or these rocks here.
Yeah.
Does it feel to you like we're just sort of temporary visitors in an ancient place? Or how do you think about the age of the world?
I never asked myself that question. I was just made me think of something because I was in a reception in London. It was full of people and it was very hot. And I fainted, and I didn't know I was fainting. Of course, I just like that. And it was when I came back, there was a lot of people above me looking at me, and it was like I was in darkness still, and I couldn't understand where I was. I didn't know who I was. I had no idea, and I wondered if I was, in another dimension looking at those people, and I couldn't relate to it. And I thought I must be dead, and this must be something from my childhood I'm remembering. And it was so intense because I was also surrounded by darkness. It was like they were looking at you, and I couldn't relate to anything. And then kind of I fell in, and then it was okay again. But I think that's the closest I've come to. I think that must be how it is to be dead, not looking back, but just. Mm-hmm. The blackness that comes, it was something black coming like that, and then it is nothing, it's just gone.
Can we go this way, or does it end? This is pretty here, isn't it?
The New Yorker's Josh Rothman with the Norwegian writer Carl Ove Knausgård. His new book of essays is called Autumn, and the next volume, Winter, will be out in the winter.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.